Good afternoon and welcome to a Juno Afternoon. This is Katie Bosler, your Monday host. Today we have decreasing clouds with the highs around 51 degrees, the light winds becoming south winds west to 5 miles per hour by the afternoon. Overnight, mostly cloudy skies with patchy fog and drizzle later. Lows around 43. Tomorrow, Tuesday, partly cloudy. Well, I just say that's partly sunny. And looks like we have some really nice fall weather. I think the fall is just making up for what happened, or that excuse for a summer. Yeah, not a lot of precipitation, at least through midweek in the capital city, with the highs in the high 40s and the lows in the high 30s. Well, today on a Juno Afternoon, we'll find out about the second season of Mudrooms with guests Amanda Compton and Alita Buss. David Lendrum and Margaret Tharp will give us a preview of Wednesday's workshop, Landscape as a Language. We'll get details about Friday's sale auction, and Carlene and Roger Grummet will let us know about the Empty Chairs project. But first, let's hear some national Native news.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Tristan Ottone, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Today is Columbus Day in the United States, but a new book out now, Columbus, The Four Voyages, tells a different story of the European sailor. KGOU's Kurt Gortney talked with the author and filed this report.
There are lots of books on Columbus and his four voyages to discover a shorter route to China, but Lawrence Bergreen's work presents a more complete picture of his celebrated and controversial career. The author says Columbus was unprepared to meet the indigenous people he found living on the islands where he landed.
Columbus was so deluded, for example, that he thought he was going to encounter either people from the Bible, because he believed in a literal interpretation of the Bible, and they would be speaking ancient tongues, or the Chinese.
Bergreen also says Columbus was conflicted in his feelings and dealings with the Tiano peoples he encountered. The research for the book shows the sailor misinterpreted the warm welcome he received as an invitation to stay. But the indigenous communities had a different idea.
As time went on, the Taino, the Indians, thought that Columbus would leave, and he had worn out his welcome, and they wanted him to go, and Columbus didn't go, and this caused a great crisis for the Taino when it became apparent that he wasn't leaving.
The author says Columbus failed to understand the effect his presence had on the communities he encountered. Bergreen says historical documents report tens of thousands of Taino people committed suicide in the face of the European conquest, and hundreds of thousands more died from diseases introduced by the newcomers. He says because the Taino and other indigenous peoples did not have a written language, the full story of the reaction to Columbus and his men will never be known. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gortney.
Students at Fort Lewis College in Colorado will spend Columbus Day with an event called the Real History of the Americas. It's the fourth year in a row the affair has taken place, and organizers have planned activities all day, including live art, speakers, a drum group, storytellers, food, and dancers. Noelle Altaha is one of the event's organizers. She says the event began as an alternative to Columbus Day, but has grown over the years to more closely resemble an educational conference. Altaha says she hopes the day's activities will help to share different perspectives on the Americas.
We continue to try and share that message of things that were forgotten in our textbooks while we were in school, things that were ignored, and the history that was erased or hidden. In a way, we do it for other people to know our history, but we also do it to heal ourselves because the history is painful.
Altaha says in the past, organizers have been criticized for not taking a more militant approach to Columbus Day, but she says creating a safe, open space for dialogue and learning has proven to be more useful. A British Columbia First Nation has reached an agreement with the provincial government that might speed up the construction of a liquefied natural gas plant. The deal is part of a government strategy that would see several facilities built along Canada's west coast to export liquefied natural gas to Asia. Dan Karpinchuk has more.
The deal would allow the purchase or lease of land that will enable the Haisla to work with the industry. That means involvement in developing both a plant and an export terminal on Douglas Channel. For the province, it means opening up a whole new natural gas strategy. The plan would have three liquefied natural gas plants running by 2020, creating more than 1,400 jobs and generating $600 billion in economic activity over 30 years. For the Haisla, it means not being left out of development projects. Ellis Ross is the chief counselor for the Haisla Nation.
It allows the Haisla to look at land in Haisla territory in a different light. It gives the Haisla and associated projects this certainty needed for the LNG proposals and other projects coming forward in our territory.
In addition to the plants, five export terminals are in the works with two other potential projects under consideration. The terminals would allow the province to export natural gas to emerging markets in Japan, China, South Korea, and India. Ross says the deal provides the guarantees his people were looking for, and it not only benefits them, but all Canadians. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
During this week in 1966, award-winning author Sherman Alexie was born. The Spokane Coeur d'Alene writer of The Lone Ranger and Tonto Fistfight in Heaven debuted a new book last week entitled Blasphemy, New and Selected Stories. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Ottone.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kowanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Tell me a story of days gone by. I want to leave this life of mine. Nothing, sorrow and pain I find. Tell me a story of days. Tell me of princes, jesters, and kings, town fools, crown jewels, scepters, and rings, pretties and little girls lost in the woods. Tell me of axes, tell me of woes, tell me of stories, days gone by. I want to see this life of mine, nothing but sorrow and pain.
This is Katie Bosler, and I'm hosting a Juno Afternoon on Mondays these days, and with me in the studio is Amanda Compton of Mud Rooms.
Hi, Katie. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. For the uninitiated, what is Mud Rooms?
Mud Rooms is Juno's live storytelling event. I guess I shouldn't say is Juno's live storytelling event because people are probably telling stories live all the time, but we have created a monthly event where October through May, every month, we have something in the vein of The Moth, which is in New York City, and a lot of people are familiar with that because some of their stories are broadcasted on This American Life. The movie At the Nick, which just played, Sleepwalk With Me, originated from a story that someone told on stage at The Moth. So
oh, really?
Maybe
yeah.
You could be in a movie someday, Kate, because Katie's one of our speakers, actually. So I guess the idea is that we have seven people every month that we have recruited or that have come to us and said we will participate, and they tell a story for 7 minutes on a particular theme, and every month we have a different theme. And we're starting our second season on Wednesday, so 2 days from today. And so we have it at the same venue at Holy Trinity Church, either upstairs or downstairs in McPeters Hall. And we have treats provided from either the Rookery this month, I think Bee's Bistro the next month. And we have very awesome people or whoever. They just represent anyone in who's willing to get on stage and tell a personal story. And it just really hit a vein in people or the community last season. It really drew a lot of people came in, about 130 each event. And we donate 100% of our profits to a charity. So it ended up raising over $4,000. And people really seem to just be ignited inside on hearing these stories from people that they knew already. They got to hear more about them, or people that they maybe have kind of wondered about or just didn't even know were around. But we even entertain people who are visiting. Like when we were in the session, we had Les Guerra. And I don't know if Paulus French will be here this year, but he wants to be on board. Legislators. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know I can attest to this. I brought my parents to the last one in May, after the end of the first season of Mudrooms, and they loved it, you know. And there are also, though, some parameters which revolve around the number 7.
There are some parameters. We took our formatting from a event in Anchorage called Arctic Entries, and they took their format and the venue from an event in Baltimore. It is 7 stories, and there are 7. So there's 7 people, and they get 7 minutes to speak. And we don't kick them off
and
the stage.
And you charge that, and $7.
Yeah, and that was just what we decided.
Okay.
At this point, we're charging $7. Yeah, and that's give or take. If people want to come in and they can't afford to, or they just forgot to bring money, or they want to give $20, people, this happens on a monthly basis. People just give extra money because they have it, they enjoy it, and it goes to a great cause. So
it's a volunteer operation.
Totally volunteer.
You're a volunteer.
I'm a volunteer.
And you started this. Well, why go to the trouble?
It's fun. It's fun, and I think more than that, it's this emotional emotional pleasure. It's like you get tickled on this emotional level by hearing these people tell stories about ranging from a really getting over a period of grief to finding out that you had a second stomach. I mean, there's this whole breadth of stories that are completely entertaining and touching more than anything to hear. And so that's why it's been fun to be involved with it and see how embracive the community has been.
Well, I was absolutely blown away by the few stories that I heard last year. I mean, I went to attend it twice. And quite frankly, as being one of the storytellers on Wednesday, I'm daunted.
Are you?
Yes. I mean,
do we need to talk about this?
Yes, let's talk about it for the community right now. Well, yeah, because here's the deal. You know, I come from a background of doing radio stories. And, okay, a prescribed 7-minute radio story is you read a script, you know you have 7 minutes, and you make it work. But it's all on paper first. It's all prescribed. Whereas the rules with mudrooms are you're really not supposed to have notes, right?
We discourage notes.
Yeah. So you're supposed to stand up there and, like, tell this story off the top of your head in 7 minutes.
And most people have rehearsed it or something, but...
Well, for those of you who might be speaking on Wednesday and haven't rehearsed it, I highly recommend it. Because I ran my story by some friends on Saturday.
Oh, you did?
I was 2/3 of the way through, and I was at 10 minutes.
Right. This would be a great time to give credit to some of the other people that helped me. Alita Buss is my co-host, and she is instrumental on getting this program running. And she was the first person I came to that was on board and agreed to be a host. And she is fantastic. So she's on stage with me. And then we also have a lot of help from Tom Cosgrove, who helps recruit people and set things up, Pat Race and Mark Wheeler, and new to what we're calling our storyboard this season is Katie Spielberger is joining us. And we're looking at maybe recruiting a couple other people who are interested in helping us out. So when I say we, that's who we're talking about. And what were you and I talking about?
we were talking about, you know, that this is kind of daunting.
Oh,
that even if it's your personal story, you think, hey, I can tell this story in 7 minutes.
And it's something that when we go to people and say, hey, are you interested in telling a story? And they're like, oh, I don't know. And we say, come to an event. And I think that helps diffuse a little bit of the anxiety because you realize how accepting and encouraging the audience is. They, and we advertise this as an event that's of the people, for the people, by the people, and we're not expecting thespians. We're not expecting the audience some completely, although we have those, we have completely choreographed like comedic stories, but we also have people that cry and break down. And I guess that's the thing is if you keep it to 6 minutes and then give yourself that extra minute, assuming that by audience reaction, you're going to melt at some points and you're going to emphasize some points. So,
So just expect that. Well, expect it to, okay.
So you're forewarning me that I might have to, like,
yeah, you might have to get the hook. because that's the thing, too, is tell our listeners about you, about the, I mean, you get 7 minutes, and when 7 minutes is up, you're done.
Well, we don't have whips. we don't have any sort of, like, violence there. But we do have deer calls.
That goes like 5 minutes, something like that?
Yeah, we use a doe call at 5 minutes to say, hey, you've got 2 minutes left. And seven, we use a buck call, which is a, you know, sounds funny. I didn't bring it. Yeah. And at that point, you're kindly asked to wrap it up. And I should say that we have music. So if you're a musician and you're interested in a venue where you want to play and be heard, we try not to do bands, more acoustic type. We have Steve Nelson and Clay Good who are playing on Wednesday.
Fantastic.
And our storytellers on Wednesday are Mo Hicks, Margo Waring, and I apologize, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Frank Amadori, Joy Lyon, Katie Bosler, Livy Bacalar, and Dave Thomas. And Joy Lyon is a representative from the Imagination Library, who is the charity that we will be donating all our money to this year. And so she will be our first speaker, and she will talk about this organization that requires matching grants in order to receive the funding that they need to give free books to people 5 and under, to families with children 5 and under. And that is in that is parallel with our mission of spreading stories, mm-hmm. And there you go.
And you have a very nice website up.
Mudrooms.org. Pat Race helped me get it going. I took a class on writing for the web last semester and really fine-tuned all of the content. It should be easy, clear. That website has an email if you want to be a musician or a storyteller or just get emails about when our next events are. It has our themes for all upcoming events this season. And it has, if you are a storyteller, what to expect. So if you're in Katie's position, you could go to the What to Expect button and see photographs of the crowd. You can see what people, how to prepare, tips. And so
I'm looking at that
has,
page right now.
She's looking at it.
You've been confirmed 2 weeks ago.
It also has resources. Mm-hmm. So if you want to find someone locally that has experience storytelling to run your story by, or you want to go check out that program I was talking about, The Moth, or This American Life, which are both similar but national events, you can be directed from our site to those.
All right. Well, Amanda Compton of Mudrooms, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Katie Bosler, and thank you to the community for embracing such an awesome event. And we really hope to see you Wednesday, 7 o'clock, Holy Trinity Church, cash. And we do, we will be having truffles, cookies, and brownies from the Rookery.
All right. Well, looking forward to it.
Thanks. Bye.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 8th of October, 2012. It's the day that Christopher Columbus reached the New World. 1492 on this date, one of the sailors on the Pinta sighted land and island in the Bahamas. They'd been at sea for 10 weeks from Palos, Spain, Santa Maria, the Pinta, and the Niña. Columbus thought he had reached East Asia when he sighted Cuba. He thought it was China. When they landed on Hispaniola, he thought it might be Japan. He made 4 expeditions to the New World during his lifetime, and his discovery made Spain the wealthiest, most powerful nation on earth. It's the birthday of John Cooper Powys, born in Derbyshire, England, 1872, novelist and poet, moved to upstate New York in 1930, wrote his masterpieces Weymouth Sands and his autobiography, A Glastonbury Romance. John Cooper Powys did not care for modern life so much, never drove a car, never used a typewriter, did not like talking on the telephone. Powys said, a great modern novel consists of and ought to include just about everything. It's the birthday of the poet Philip Booth, born Hanover, New Hampshire, 1925. Grew up on the coast of Maine, where his ancestors have lived for hundreds and hundreds of years, has his office in the house where 5 generations of his family lived before him. He said, almost all my mother's ancestors, my grandparents, great-grandparents, great-great, and so on, are buried in the cemetery here. In the November of the year, I often go and look at their graves and see their names and the years carved on them. It gives me a very pleasant and not at all morbid sense of the relations, the relationships that one has with a place. It's the birthday of the comic book writer Harvey Pekar, born in Cleveland, 1939. His father was a Talmudic scholar who supported the family working as a grocer. The kid was smart, but he dropped out of community college, got a job as a file clerk at a VA hospital, spent his free time reading books and collecting jazz records, owned about 15,000 at one time. And it was through record collecting that he became friends with the comic book artist Robert Crumb. Pekar complained to Crumb that nobody wrote comic books about real people and their ordinary struggles, and so the two of them set out to do that. They wrote American Splendor. Crumb did the art, and Pekar wrote the dialogue. American Splendor, the first ever autobiographical comic book series. First one came out in 1976, published a new issue every summer. Wrote about going to the supermarket and about his co-workers at the office and losing keys and dating girls and getting married, buying a house, going through cancer treatment, and so forth. Harvey Pekar, who said, I wanted to write literature that pushed people into their lives rather than helping people escape from them. An anthology of his work was published last year as American Splendor, The Life and Times of Harvey Pekar. Here's a poem about Columbus, entitled Columbus Sailed the Ocean Blue by Ramon Montaigne. Columbus sailed the ocean blue back in 1492. He sailed across and spotted land, a beach, and people on the sand. He called them Indians because he had no idea where he was. India was just a guess. When in doubt, declare success. A poem by Ramon Montaigne, Columbus Sailed the Ocean Blue, used by permission of the poet. Here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, helping businesses leverage a powerful form of advertising, online reviews. Learn more at Reputation.com. And by Goddard College, offering low residency bachelor's and master's of fine arts degrees in creative writing. More at Goddard.edu. Produced by Kathy Roach, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Oh, thank you.
Hi, this is Scott Wagner.
And I'm Steve Schick. We're realtors with the Southeast Alaska Board of Realtors.
We understand the strong communities start in the home.
And that violence against women is destructive to women, families, and communities.
While not all men use violence,
we believe that all men have a responsibility to end it.
Through the White Ribbon Campaign,
I pledge not to commit, condone, or remain silent
about violence against women because
Alaska men choose respect.
This message brought to you by Juno's Violence Prevention Coalition.
And you're listening to A Juno Afternoon on KTOO FM 104.3. This is Katie Bosler, your Monday host, and with me in the studio is Margaret Tharp and David Lundrum, and they're here to give us a preview of Wednesday's workshop. It's part of the Master Gardeners Association Fall Series, Landscape is a Language. Welcome to A Juno Afternoon.
Yeah, hi. Well, beautiful day, huh?
Oh, my gosh. Well, this is making up for summer, isn't it?
Yes.
Sort of.
It makes you want to get out in the yard.
Yes, always.
And in everybody else's yard, too.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
That's right.
So, and you can hear the landscape out there singing today, can't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know my yard is saying, clean me up, please.
Almost everybody right now is saying that.
Yeah.
But Landscape is a Language, I'm really intrigued by the title of this workshop on Wednesday.
Well, you know, it's really kind of just a basic concept that there are a lot of stories out there, and if you know what you're looking at, they speak to you. So a lot of people just take for granted the view out the window of their car as they drive down the road, or they're riding their bike out the, you know, the 35 mile or whatever. But all along the way, there are stories. Stories of there was a mudslide here, stories of here's erosion, stories of here's a beautiful garden, stories of somebody's house where it says, I work all the time, I'm a crabber, or I'm a seine netter, or I love cars, so here's 50 of them. You know, every place has a story. And so I'm always looking and seeing stories in the landscape. And so I have a slideshow that I have a large selection of different kinds of pictures of the landscape, some of Versailles, some of Treadwell, some of neighborhoods around the United States, talking about different stories you see when you travel through those spaces, and trying to key people into the fact that there's a lot to see out there.
And some of the stories are ones that are passed on from inhabitant to inhabitant. So you might plant something, and who lives there after you might
cut it down.
Keep what you had, or don't keep what you had, or keep half of what you had. And when you look at them, lots of times you can kind of read that going on. You can also read in the shape of the trees when they lose their leaves. You can read what their life was like, how many years it took them to get this big, and where there was a big storm, and how many times they've been broken down by bears. And you look at that stuff, it all describes things to you.
Of course, you have to be a plant person in order to appreciate the story that you're seeing. And so in some instances, you look at landscapes and you can see that it's been the tree has been cut down once. And there's a few of the original trees that weren't cut down and how different they look from the second growth that's coming on or the third growth that's coming on.
Well, you know,
think about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, to quote the writer Thomas King, he says, the truth about stories is that's all we are.
Right.
And I'm there's kind of a storytelling theme, I guess, to Juno Afternoon today, because we just had a meeting with Confidant talking about this storytelling forum. And I really like this way of looking at the natural world and the man-made, if you will, natural world.
And how many times have you looked at Sandy Beach and wondered, how come it's so sandy? There's no other sand around here. You know, until somebody kind of clues you in, you don't have any idea where that stuff came from.
The mine.
It was a very significant thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we were here for several years before we had any clue, 35 years ago.
So even in your hikes, you see it in the wild world, too. There's a lot of messages there, lots of stories.
So will this workshop address how to tell the story that you want to tell through your own landscaping of your
home? It's mostly just
home,
kind of an awakening for people to say, why don't you look? Maybe there's a story there.
Or is this maybe the story that you want to tell in your front yard?
It's not a critical essay of sorts. You know, I don't like to, it's appreciation if it's anything. It's not about, you should never have planted that huge evergreen in front of the only sunny window in your house. I mean, that's not what it's about.
If there's a bunch of weeds, it doesn't mean you have other priorities.
Weeds have a place in the world. You know, you just have to make sure they stay there. Just a way of viewing what's around us. And when you look at, you know, the mountainside, evergreens grow in some places, and where the snow shoots down in the avalanches, they don't grow there. There's a story, you know. With your naked eye, you can see all kinds of
events. So just look a little deeper, if you will.
And there's another level of the story, too. Mm-hmm. And there's the conscious level of the story. And that landscape is a language that not only do you interpret what's going on in the natural world, but in the planted and designed world, landscape is a directional force. It's a wayfinding force. It's a social instruction. Come here. This is the front door. This is a public area. You can behave civilly to each other. This is a private area. You can't come in here. You know, all that stuff is said non-verbally to people as they come onto your property or you go onto somebody else's property.
Right. Design plays a big part of it. There's, you know, it depends on how many layers you want to peel back to get the different chapters.
Yes.
So, and a lot of times you live in a small town like Juneau and you think, ah, oh, there's nothing going on here. You know, this, I get this from my kids, you know. I'm like, maybe you just need to look a little deeper. You know, there's a lot going on here.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things that you see once you, you know, when the scale gets peeled away and you realize there are 200 of those red hawthorn trees around the downtown and the downtown of Douglas that are all the same age.
And the apple trees.
Where did they come from? How did they all get here? How did somebody bring 200 trees the same age and plant them here?
How did they get here? Can you give me a preview?
I can.
Go ahead.
Okay, there was a family came from Scotland to be lighthouse keepers, and they brought the progenitor of that tree with them from the family home in Scotland. And when the father fell to his death, they came into town. They were taken in by the Jacobson family. They gave that tree to the Jacobsons, and all those other trees are parts of that original tree. Cuttings from it.
Well, as a Douglas resident, thank you very
much.
And the apple trees must have a similar story. You know, when the miners came here, this was Silicon Valley. They were inventing a whole new world with their hard rock mining. And they brought cuttings of trees and roses from other places where they came from, as pioneers do, to bring a part of home with them. So those all got planted at the same time, too.
So this is part of the fall series for the Southeast Alaska Master Gardeners Association.
Right.
How will this tie in with personal landscaping or landscaping of your home environment?
Well, I think that just to be aware of what it is you see help you make a hierarchy of what you like and what you don't like. A lot of people come to me for consultations and they'll say, you know, I just don't have a clue, or I'm just too busy to think about it. You organize my landscape. And I always try to make them do some homework because they'll end up with a landscape I like. Mm-hmm. But it's important that they end up with a landscape they like. So they have to do a little bit of...
And that they feel like they can maintain.
Well, and that it's theirs. Mm-hmm.
And the landscape is not just decoration.
Remember, right.
The landscape's a way to use your outdoor space. Landscape is really a way of expanding your usable area. You know, some of it's going to be amenity and some of it you're going to just look at. But a lot of it you're going to use. You're going to be in it. You have to make it comfortable for yourself. So the kinds of activities that you want to participate in, you want to make sure you have settings for that to go on.
Right. It's like you design skateboard areas for people who have kids who want to practice being on their skateboard. You put in golf greens for people who are amateur golfers. You know, it doesn't always have to be about plants. A lot of times it's about hard space or a covered area to do barbecues or how to hide a view you don't want to look at.
The
story never ends.
That's right.
Well, this is going to happen on Wednesday, the 10th of October. It's a noontime brown bag presentation at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center.
And on the second Wednesday of every month, there's another session like that.
Okay, yes. There's one in November, and then there's also one, in November. And then there's also one in December. And if you want to get more information about this, listeners, you can go to seakmg.org. That's www.seakmg.org, or you can just Google Southeast Alaska Master Gardeners.
There you go.
Thank you so much.
Is there anything you'd like to add?
Well,
it's a beautiful day. Get out there and enjoy it.
And really, this is one of the best times of the year to plant things.
Oh.
So if you want to plant things, okay, get yourself out there and get doing it right now.
All right. Yeah. I needed that push.
Okay.
I'm glad you two came by.
Okay. Thank,
thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Tracy Spring on A Juno Afternoon, and that's her tune Palindrome from her album Looking Forward, Looking Back. And Tracy Spring and T.R. Ritchie will be performing in concert this coming Saturday, the 13th of October at 7:30 at Resurrection Lutheran Church. So if you want more information about that, you can go to TracySpring.com or TRRitchie.com. That's with two R's and an I-E. Should be a good show. Well, with me in the studio is Kate Walters and Jordan Nigro from SAIL. They're here to talk about the 20th anniversary auction happening fundraiser this Friday for SAIL. Good to have you both in the studio.
Thanks. Great to be here.
So tell us about what's happening with the auction.
Well, you know, we do the dinner and auction every year. We've been doing it for, I don't know, at least 10 years, maybe more. But this year is SAIL's 20th anniversary as an agency, and SAIL stands for Southeast Alaska Independent Living, and we are an independent living center, and an aging and disability resource center. And so we work with so many folks around Southeast because at some point we all get older, and as we know, many of the population experiences some sort of disability. So we count on a lot of individual donations to help with the work we do, and this is one of our, this is our biggest fundraiser. So,
okay, and what time does it start, and what do you have on tap for it?
It starts at 6 p.m. on Friday at Centennial Hall, and we'll start with the first hour of kind of socializing and bidding. We will have Dale Wygant and the Oompa Band as our music, which should be really fun, and we'll have several speakers and a lovely dinner by Abby's Kitchen, catered by Abby's Kitchen. And hopefully we'll have many yummy desserts for people to bid on, too.
So people are donating desserts, I imagine.
Yes. And in fact, we actually still need a few desserts. So if you're interested in making a dessert for the auction, you can contact Kate at our office at 586-4920.
Okay. 586-4920 if you want to donate a dessert to the sale auction for Friday. And what other items are on hand for the auction?
Well, we have lots of stuff, actually. We have some really good getaway packages around Southeast, trips to Haines, trips to Gustavus. We have some great excursions around Juneau, so if you have friends coming to visit, we've got Tracy Allen Marine actually donated Tracy Arm Cruise for two this year. So, you know, if you have friends coming to town, that's always a great thing to do. And then we have lots of stuff that people donated as well. We've got jewelry and artwork and coats, and we've got everything.
We have a chainsaw.
Yeah. So we've got lots of fun stuff like that, and lots of gift certificates, and we always have a pretty fantastic turnout of items. You know, we really are so appreciative of all the businesses that donate to us, because we couldn't do it without them. So, and individuals. Mm-hmm.
Are you encouraging people to buy tickets in advance?
Yes, we will sell out, and we have tickets that are still for sale on our website, or you can call the office. So you can go to www.saleinc.org, or you can call the office at 586-4920. One thing about buying the tickets online that I just wanted to mention, because we've heard this from a few people, is that people are getting a little confused on the online form for some reason. It's a little funky where
it looks like PayPal is your only option
to
pay.
Yeah, but it's not.
You just have to click a couple more pages.
Just keep pushing through the pages is basically, we're going to ask our web guy to put something up there. But if you get stuck, feel free to call us and we can walk you through it, or just keep clicking through and you'll get there.
But okay.
At any rate, we have quite a few tickets left. I think we've sold about 100 tickets and we have about 250 seats, and I think we're all... We know that Junoites are last-minuters, so this tends to be the week that we sell all our tickets. So if you've been thinking about it, now's the time. Buy your tickets now, because the more people that buy them in advance, we do assigned seating, and we try to put folks together who we know are friends, and the more people buy their tickets ahead of time, really the easier our job is, and we really appreciate it.
So you're on the countdown to the Southeast Alaska Independent Living 20th Anniversary Auction. Anything different or special on board for the 20th anniversary?
Oh, yes. First Lady Sandy Parnell will be speaking, kind of saying why sale is important to her, and just doing an introduction for the evening. So that's pretty awesome, pretty special.
And we also have Dwayne Mays, who is the Director of Senior and Disability Services, will be speaking. And we have Peter Slatton, who is nationally... He lives, I believe, in New York, actually, but he's been helping us with some things, and he's the president of the board for Ski for Light, which is a blind skiing group.
Oh, yes. And yeah, I know there's some Juneau people who have been working with that.
Yep, yep.
And so they have, like, a big ski race, I think, in Colorado every year, where I know at least a couple of individuals from Juneau who have gone and skied with a blind cross-country skier in this race.
Yep, and that's exactly.
Wonderful.
And Peter's really involved with that organization, and consequently has become somewhat involved with us, And he's going to kind of be speaking to recreation for people with disabilities, because as lots
Perfect.
Of folks know, ORCA is one of our, you know, most visible programs in the community. And this
is the program that takes individuals and groups up to Eagle Crest
yep,
to ski.
That's one of the things that ORCA does, and lots of other outdoor stuff, because those of us that live in Juneau, we all know that recreation is an important part of our lives, and that goes for everybody, whether you have a disability or not. So,
yeah, and are there any other sale programs that you're particularly excited about, new ones that are coming up?
Well, you know, we're always doing great stuff. One of the things that I've talked about on the radio here before is our Home Map program, which is home modifications for aging in place, and we actually did just recently get a home modification grant, and so we'll be working on some folks who have gotten, we'll be working on kind of combining those things and being able to do home maps and then look at what sort of home modifications need to come out of the home map. So,
great. Well, is there anything either of you want to add about the sale auction this Friday?
No, I think it's going to be a fun time, and you should come.
Yeah, we'd love to see you, and buy your tickets now.
6 o'clock, Centennial Hall.
Yep.
And if people want to get tickets again, where do they go?
SaleInc.org, or you can call us at the office, 586-4920.
All right. Well, Jordan Nigro and Kate Walters from Sales, thanks so much for coming in, and good luck with Auction Week.
Thank you,
Katie. Thank you.
This is Bird Note.
Okay, 1, 2, 3, 10, 11, 12, 13.
At this time of year, volunteer observers are counting shorebirds on the move. Sandpipers, dowitchers, plovers, dunlin, and others that raised their young in the Arctic are now making long southbound migrations. They're looking for places to feed and rest along the way. One such place is Crockett Lake, on Whidbey Island, Washington. Here, Sarah Schmidt identifies and counts the travelers three times a month in spring and fall. She sends her results to the International Shorebird Survey. Here's Sarah.
When it began in 1974, part of it was to identify the key stopover sites on these thousands of mile migrations that the shorebirds do, and also try and see whether the loss of some of these key sites might have a significant impact on shorebird populations. Crockett Lake is not huge, but obviously for birds that come here it's important, and also you can look at trends at any one place and it adds to the overall picture.
It's not easy to count shorebirds on a distant mudflat.
There's pebbles all over the mud that are about the same blotchy brown and white. They're kind of the size of a little peep. I go slowly and I really am looking for movement.
Bird Note celebrates all volunteers who are helping to put together the overall picture. They're supporting the conservation of critical lands. To learn about the survey site nearest you, begin at our website, birdnote.org.
Learn all about the Alaska Coastal Rainforest Center at the next evening at Egan. Director Allison Bidlack will give an overview of the center and highlight examples of collaborative research in Southeast Alaska on temperate rainforests. Friday, October 12th, 7 p.m. at the Egan Lecture Hall at the University of Alaska Southeast. Also simulcast on UATV Channel 11 and via live stream on the web. This message is brought to you by the University of Alaska Southeast.
This is Katie Bosler, and you are listening to a Juneau Afternoon for the 8th of October, 2012. It's just about 10 to 4 here, and with me in the studio are Carlene and Roger Grummet. They're here to let us know about something called the Empty Chairs Project. This is a memorial to the World War II Japanese-American internees of Juneau, Alaska. Sounds like a fascinating and a very worthwhile project. Good to have you both here.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. So tell us about the project and how you got involved.
Well, the Empty Chair Project is establishing a memorial for the Japanese, the 34 Japanese that were interned from Juneau.
That's very interesting to me. That's the first I've heard about it.
Well, we didn't hear about it as kids growing up either, so it is unusual. But this is what we're doing. The the empty chair involves one of the Japanese high school students, John Tanaka, who was graduating in May of 1942, and they were leaving in mid-April. So A.B. Phillips, the superintendent of schools, decided they'd have a special graduation for John, which they did. And he was also the valedictorian that year of the school. And from what I've read, there was not a dry eye in the gymnasium that day when he did graduate.
Mm.
He went on to go to the University of Washington and spend his summers up here working in the City Cafe restaurant, which his parents operated. And then went to St. Louis University and got a doctor's degree in anesthesiology. And so he did quite well for himself.
But he was interned.
Yes, he was interned for 3 years in Minidoka.
The other part of this, the empty chair part, is although he graduated early, when the class had its regular graduation, they left an empty chair to honor John and the other Japanese that were taken.
Right. So now, is this a project how did this get off the ground? How did this get started?
Well, as a lot of these things do, you don't expect them. My sister and I, her good friend, Mary Tanaka Apo, was John Apo's sister, and they grew up together and were classmates and friends, and she was out in and out of our home a lot. And about a year ago, Betty Marriott, who lives in Juneau, was having a talk on the Minidoka internship because her family was also interned in Minidoka. And I asked if I could bring my sister, and we looked at one of their books that had all the names, and we saw the names of the Tanakas and the Komatsuburas and the Taguchis, and it really galvanized us, and we started talking about it. And I said, I don't think there's anything here that tells us about what happened, because we didn't have it in any of our school books or heard about it from any of our history teachers. So we decided that I would look into it, and I talked to Marie Darlin, who's with the Historical Society and the State Historical Society, and found out not only that nothing had been done in Juneau, but nowhere in the state, because they were taken from all over the state as well. So we decided we needed to form a committee, and the class of 1958 took on the project as the sponsors, the original sponsors.
So this is the Juneau High School class of 58.
Juneau.
Oh, wonderful.
Mm-hmm. So that's how it got started.
Yeah. So how long has this been going now?
Well, it seems like it's been a long time, but we just started in May.
In May.
And the first thing we had to do is get some endorsements, which we have gotten from the Juneau Historical Society, from the Juneau School District, from the Juneau Advisory, Parks and Rec Advisory Counselor Board, and they have okayed us to have the memorial itself located in Capitol School Park.
Okay. So now you're raising money.
Yes.
To put together this memorial.
Yeah.
And what will the memorial consist of? What's the vision?
The memorial will if you it's going to have an empty chair.
Yes.
Set on a bed about 5x7, which depicts the gym floor from the Juneau High School.
I see.
And the chair, of course, would be what the chairs the kids sat on.
But it'll be bronzed.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be, the chair itself will be about 1.5 times the size of the normal chair, so it'll be interactive. Kids can sit on it. People can sit on it. It's going to be, as Carlene said, in the Capitol School Park in the southeast corner. And from that little knoll that's there, you can see the harbor. You can see the tour ships, which would kind of tie in with the ships that the Japanese were on when they were taken out of here and when they came back.
And an artist from Seattle has designed it and will be placing it.
Yes, and you have a very nice brochure here. Where I think you have the artist is Peter
Raekwon.
Raekwon.
Mm-hmm. From Seattle. And Mary Tanaka, John Tanaka's sister, was the one who found Peter.
Yeah. Well, what a great project. So what's the next step here as far as raising money for this?
Well, We have been very fortunate in finding that there's a lot of support in the community for this project. It's been really very heartwarming. And so that's been something that's been ongoing. But there will be some fundraising efforts this winter. There's a group called the J Girls, and that's a group of Japanese women that have decided to take on this project as well. And they're going to be planning different events. They've talked about having a Japanese dinner and auction. And Steve Tata with the Juno Symphony has joined in with the effort, and he wants to put on some kind of a musical presentation. We're not sure what that will be yet, but he is looking to do something. We've just finished writing to a grant for the National Parks Confinement Sites Program. It's a national grants program, and we've been talking to the director of it, and it's sounding very promising for us. He encouraged us to finish the grant, and we just found out today that the city is going to be the applicant agency for us, so we're very happy about that.
Congratulations.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's going to be an educational component, which is one of the most important parts.
Yes. So are you collecting stories from the internees?
Yes. Mm-hmm. They're still, yes. I have a list.
So are they?
There are also stories from what the community did at that time. If I have a few minutes, I'd like to just...
Yes, please.
Mike Monigle, who was an attorney in town, took it upon himself to have the property of these people put in a trust, or in some fashion, so it was protected, so when they came back, the property was there. There were five gentlemen in Juneau in 1942. One was Roy Rutherford, who was president and general manager of the Juneau Lumber Company, J.F. Mullen, who owned and operated Barron's Bank, Cash Cole, who was a contractor in town, Dave Femmer, who had a transfer business, and Mike Monigle, all wrote letters to the Department of Army supporting the two gentlemen, Mr. Tanaka and Mr. Fukuyama, who were taken, even though they've been here for 25 or 30 years, they were taken and put in a special camp in New Mexico because they were considered subversives. So they wrote letters to the Department of Army in Anchorage, which eventually got back to Washington, D.C., which eventually got them out of this special camp and reunited with a family couple years later.
It's just amazing to uncover these kinds of stories, isn't it? This history.
Yeah. There's another one, very briefly. There was a grocery store, home liquor, run by John Hermley. And when they came back, he went to the Tanakas, Komatsu Bars, and the Taguchis, who are now running the restaurant, and told them that whatever they needed, come down to the store and take what they needed, and when they got a cash flow, they could go ahead and pay this back. I mean, that was pretty special.
Yeah, well, I'm sure as this project goes on, you'll keep on covering more fascinating history and stories.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to comment, too, in terms of the support.
Yes.
That we've been, Jane Lindsay of the museum has also offered to have an event when this whole thing takes place in 2014. And we'd like to also really thank and let people know that the Juneau Community Foundation has taken on...
Yes.
Being the repository for the fundraising.
And if people want to get more information about this project or how to contribute, where do they go?
They can go to our website, which is emptychairproject.wordpress.com. They can call the Juneau Community Foundation, or they can send a check to them at 340 North Franklin Suite 4. And they can and be sure if they write a check to write the empty chair on the memo line.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Carlene and Roger Grummet. Thank
you
so much for coming in to tell us about this fascinating project.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center, serving Southeast Alaska for over 17 years. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
You've been listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO FM in Juno, Alaska, 104.3. This is your Monday host, Katie Bosler, and I just want to thank all of our guests today for coming in to talk to us about kind of the running theme was stories, wasn't it? Carlene and Roger Grummet, Kate Walter and Jordan Nigro from SAIL, David Lender and Margaret Tharp about Landscape as a Language. That's a workshop happening at noon on Wednesday at the Jack with the Master Gardeners Fall Series, and Amanda Compton of Mudrooms. They're having their debut of the Mudrooms Storytelling 7 o'clock on Wednesday night at Holy Trinity Auditorium. K2 broadcasts at 104.3, of course, and in the Valley Knock Bay, you can also go to K276AF 103.1. Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269AO, these are translators, 101.7. And Gustavus listens on K269AO, also at 88.1. And now, National Public Radio's All Things Considered.
The climate of opinion is strongly Romney compared to a month ago when it was strongly Obama.
The Pew poll finds a big swing after last week's debate. It now shows Mitt Romney in the lead. Today is Monday, October 8th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel. Coming up, the big swing in the polls toward Romney, and these stories. The role of coal in the presidential race. The candidates vie to show who is more in favor of coal and coal miners.
I'm going to make sure we can continue to burn clean coal. People in the coal industry feel like it's getting crushed by your policies.
Also, we'll hear about the importance of the breakthrough work on stem cells that was honored today with a Nobel Prize.
Sometime within the next decade, I would imagine that we will have cells being delivered as medicine.
And the damage done to World Heritage Sites by the fight in Syria. Those stories in this hour. First, the news. From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. What a difference a debate can make. At one point, trailing President Obama, GOP challenger Mitt Romney has now eroded the president's lead. That's based on a new poll by the Pew Research Center. NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving has more.
Among registered voters, that's the larger group, the two candidates, the president and former Governor Romney, are tied at 46%. That is after, in the same Pew Research Center poll in September, a 9-point lead for the president. And among likely voters, former Governor Romney now holds an advantage, 49% to 45% over the president, after having trailed by 8 points in that same category of likely voters in September.
Roughly two-thirds of voters, 66%, said Romney did a better job in last Wednesday's debate than the president. According to health officials, the number of people confirmed to have contracted a form of fungal meningitis from tainted steroid injections has now risen above 100. Dr. John Jarrigan with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says some of those cases have been fatal.
We have had reported to us 105 cases in 9 states. Unfortunately, the illness has resulted in eight deaths.
Officials say the meningitis, which is not passed between individuals, is tied to a steroid made by a company in Massachusetts. Sent to clinics in 23 states, the product has now been recalled. The government last week had urged doctors not to use any of the company's products. World economy has already slowed sharply, but Steve Becker of Market News International says the International Monetary Fund is warning of much further slowing.